Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the latest edition of the Pinken.com Norwich City podcast, brought to you in association with Future Radio. I'm your host, Connor Southwell, joined by Paddy Davitt and Samuel Seaman to reflect on a thrilling and epic 4-4 draw against Southampton at St Mary's on Saturday. I think we've just all about caught our breath for recording this on Sunday morning. Quite a game to reflect on. I don't think we're going to be short of things to speak about today. That's for sure. Paddy, let's start with you. I mean, frenetic, breathless, just a utterly brilliant, before we actually dissect it as a spectacle, just an utterly brilliant game of football to both be at and consume as well.
Yeah, I've seen one or two, you know, Will Jennings, actually, one of our columnists, good operator. He was there yesterday, and he's kind of drawing parallels with, apologies, Will, I've got the wrong games, but kind of Forest, the Onel Hernandez game, in terms of the excitement and the ebb and flow and the seesaw nature of it. That was the first title winning season, wasn't it, around about Christmas time. And I think he also threw in maybe the Simeon Jackson, going even further back, the memorable Easter Monday game, was it, when the roof came off Gower Road when they beat Derby in dramatic fashion. Sadly, both of those were wins, weren't they? Or was the Forest game a draw? I can't remember now.
It's all, yeah, 3-3, yeah. Was,
yeah. So, yeah, there is a parallel there. But that's the only tinge, I think, of frustration from the events that unfolded at Southampton on Saturday afternoon, that you get to 95 minutes, as it was when the incident occurred with Dimi Yiannoulis and Carl Walker-Peters. 97 minutes by the time Adam Armstrong stepping up to score his second penalty of the afternoon to make it 4-4. And it's kind of the air gets let out a little bit, because 3 points in that fashion would have been a huge statement, I think, so early in the season, setting the tone, which is what it's all about. Certainly after all that went before towards the end of last season and that frustration, you know, that would really have accelerated us away from kind of what went before it. But alas, it was a point. But still, you know, as David himself said, David Wagner, you know, of course there was a disappointment and a frustration. And we'll get into the nuances of the elements in the game that probably added to that in terms of some of the key episodes. But I think by now, Sunday morning, we're recording this, I think there will be a realisation that the positives far outweigh the negatives, and so much to build on, really. And I think 4 points from six, first two games, we take a more holistic approach about it from the base that they were starting at. There's definite progress, and individually and collectively, you know, structurally in terms of the team and the shape and the individuals within that, in and out of possession. It's all positive. But, you know, when you're 4-3 up going into the 95th minute of a game to then get pegged back, of course, the human nature element of it is one of you've let 2 points go there, and it's hugely frustrating for all concerned. You could see when they trooped off at the end after acknowledging the 2,000 away fans at St Mary's, there was, you know, visible frustration on the faces of those Norwich players and the coaching staff. But yeah, I think now the realisation will start to dawn against a squad, a club, a manager we all know well in these parts, who will expect nothing less than to go straight back to the Premier League. To benchmark against them, Norwich were really as you know, as good in many facets of the game. And if that's the case moving forward now, you have to be quite optimistic that, you know, our fears that, you know, it could be another kind of mid-table nothingness type season, I think they're starting to recede now, and I think sights can be raised higher. Still a huge amount of work to do. Nobody's getting carried away, clearly. But it's positive. It's positive. The mood feels positive. The fan base, Sam spoke to a lot of fans after the game yesterday, the mood feels positive. It feels optimistic. It feels upbeat. And that's a great place to be in from where we finished the back end of last season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I spoke to Kenny McLean afterwards, and he touched upon that as well, because you can look at it and you can say 4 points over two games, incredibly positive. And it's that old cliche, isn't it, of winning your home games and drawing your away games in the Championship. You do that over, obviously, over the course of a season rather than two games, and you end up where every team wants to be. But it's more the performances that are driving, I think, some of the optimism that's being felt around Norwich at the moment. Sam, you saw it at the end, the reception those players got from the 2,000 travelling support. You sensed it at Carrow Road last week. Obviously, the nature of that particular Adam Eder winner helped, but I think even without that, that still would have existed. there's a lot more cohesion and identity and clarity over what Norwich City are trying to do, perhaps more so in these two games than the entirety of last season. Is, as Paddy said, you spoke to a lot of fans. Is that what you were hearing after the game yesterday, that the application, the performances are what's fueling this optimism and this idea that, that Paddy says that maybe this season will be a little bit better than perhaps we all thought and predicted?
I think so. And everyone I've spoken to in those conversations with fans, going back to the Olympiacos game, has said that they felt more positive about Norwich City's prospects for the season, having seen the games that they've seen. And I think that is down to the way that, that Norwich have played. And not only are the results obviously impressive in isolation, but there's certainly more of a feeling that we know what this Norwich City side is. And it might not be one that's concentrated on possession or knows what it is in that sense, but I think Norwich fans now know what sort of team they're going to watch when they go to Carrow Road or when they go on these away trips. And I think the script that we almost wrote for Norwich going into this game was exactly how it played out. And in a way, that sounds like a negative, but I think going back to those Daniel Farke years when it probably was the last time that Norwich fans felt so positive and enjoyed going to games as much as they do at the moment, I think there was a strength behind that identity, and the fans felt they were getting behind a team that they knew how they were going to play. And that was exactly what we saw yesterday. We saw all the strengths that we've been highlighting throughout the summer. And obviously at the start of this season, Norwich only had 31% possession, but they countered really quickly. That was something Russell Martin touched on post-game as well, that Norwich looked really good and really physical in that sense. And every fan that I spoke to spoke about how physical they look this season and how up for the fight they are. And I can't remember the last time that was a compliment being used around a Norwich team. We're probably going back more than 10 years for that. So I think it is exciting going forward. And certainly these performances have laid the foundations for hopefully a positive season, because we were looking back at a pre-season where, yes, the results were impressive and the performances were too, but there was a question mark over whether these players would be able to produce it under pressure. Now you go into two fixtures where there's been a lot of expectation and a lot of demands on them. You go into the first game of the season, it's against Hull, who aren't expected to challenge for promotion. Norwich fans are looking for signs of what the season's going to look like. And obviously it's the first home game of the season, and they score a 96-minute winner and they play really well. Then they go to one of the favourites in the league to get promotion and they score four goals. And I think they're proving that all of those signs in pre-season weren't necessarily just them playing with the pressure off. I think that was them showing what this team can be over the course of the season. And the performances we've seen so far certainly bode very well. I think there's probably a recognition that a draw was a deserved result yesterday, and it probably will take a little bit less time for the pain to fade on this one, given how much of a rollercoaster of an event it was and given the performance and the team they played against. But yeah, I think overall there's much more positivity, and a lot of that is down to how the team is playing generally rather than just these two results, which in isolation are very good ones. And there seems to be an excitement now to go and watch Norwich play, and it's really encouraging to see that after such a long time without it.
Yeah, and it's easy to get carried away as well. Only two games, and it's a very, very small sample size. But it's those green shoots, I guess, those elements of positivity. And of course, you can compare it to last season where they started, they obviously had three defeats, but then went on a brilliant run under Dean Smith and ended up top of the division. But all of that time was kind of caveated with they're not playing very well. And I think you see the trend in football that results follow performances. And at the moment, the two performances, particularly the two first half performances, I think in both of the games have been pretty fabulous, I would say, so far. Just to recap on yesterday, because I know it's I've done it already. It's easy to forget exactly what happened. I've managed to get the goal scorers in front of me so I can reel them off. Josh Sargent gave Norwich the lead after 7 minutes. That felt really important given how long Southampton had been without a win at home, the nervousness around the place. Russell Martin spoke about that in his press conference. I think it was the perfect start. Jan Bednarek then equalised 10 minutes later. We will come back to this goal in particular, but it was a Jack Stevens header that was saved by Angus Gunn, and his centre-back partner Bednarek followed up with the rebound. Then Shane Duffy gave away a pretty ridiculous penalty with a handball inside the area. That was converted by Adam Armstrong in the 21st minute. 2 minutes later, Gabriel Sara, in typical Gabriel Sara fashion, scored an absolute worldie, finding the top corner for when the ball was seemingly travelling away from goal. It was very similar to the goal he scored against Blackburn last season, if you remember that, at Ewood Park, where he managed to somehow pick out the top corner from a really acute position. So that meant it was 2-2 inside 23 minutes. John Rowe then gave Norwich the lead in first half stoppage time, as he did last week, with a header, which probably isn't a goal we would naturally mention with John Rowe's name, but it was excellent. Some brilliant blocking work from Ben Gibson, actually, having watched the replay, so he deserves some credit for that. Che Adams then came off the bench and made a pretty immediate impact on 57 minutes. Brilliant finish after a series of blocks, created a yard of space for himself. Excellent finish across Angus Gunn from the edge of the area. Christian Fashnak then gave Norwich the lead. In and around this, Will Smallbone was off the pitch getting treatment. Norwich kind of exploited the fact that Southampton were a man down. Ryan Manning makes a terrible error at the back. Really poor first touch, but a really clinical finish from Fashnak to come off the bench. And then in the 97th minute, which is probably the place we're going to start, really, because once again, we're going to have to talk about some of the decisions around this game. Carl Walker-Peters is brought down by Dimi Yiannoulis. Penalty given. Adam Armstrong converts in the 97th minute to make it 4-4. Hopefully, we've all caught our breath after that. I don't want to spend too long talking about the refereeing decision, because I think a lot of people have their view on it. So what we're going to do is, I am going to put the incidents to you and you're going to say yes or no. And that's where we're going to leave it. And maybe I'll let you expand if there's a particularly interesting answer. So let's start at the end with that penalty, which is perhaps the most controversial at all of all for Norwich fans, given the time that it came. Dimi Yiannoulis on Carl Walker-Peters. Sam, let's start with you. Penalty or no penalty?
Penalty. I think if it was the other way around, I would be... I think Norwich fans would be screaming for it, to be honest.
Paddy?
It's a penalty.
We're in agreement then. The other one, the offside, which is an interesting one. This was a goal that Norwich did score. Ashley Barnes tapped in from... it was a free kick by Sara, I think. Then it was Sargent at the back post. Oh, it was a shot that was saved. Sargent then collects it, puts it across goal, and Ashley Barnes taps in. Offside, Paddy, yes or no?
Well, I haven't seen it back, if I'm honest. So the debate here, it's a bit more cloudy because, you know, I think by all accounts, Barnes is offside at the moment that Sara hits the ball. But is he in that first phase? What constitutes a different phase of play? Is it the moment that the keeper saves the free kick, pushes it out? If that's a different phase of play, and Sargent wasn't offside in the initial phase, then I don't see how that goal shouldn't be allowed. So, but we don't know definitively because we haven't, you know, we're not going to be able to speak to the officials which aspect of that goal they've deemed to be offside. Is it the Sargent initial trigger move, or is it when Barnes goes? So, but irrespective of what we think, David Wagner said categorically he'd seen video footage after the game, that goal should have stood.
Sam, let's come to you on that. Are you in agreement with Paddy there?
Yeah, he's onside. Having seen the replay, it looks like Sargent is onside, and that's the only thing that matters, given he's the first one that makes contact when the keeper saves the free kick. Then Barnes is behind the ball when it gets played back to him. So I think everyone is onside at the relevant phases, and I'm not quite sure why that's been ruled out, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. It comes down to whether or not you constitute the fact that the parried shot is that a new phase or is it a different phase? And I think that's probably open to interpretation without actually having the law in front of me. I've tried to have a quick look, but there's a lot of words that I'm trying to process whilst speaking at the same time. So that's difficult, and I guess is maybe, I'm sure the law does cover that, so it's probably one for further clarification. But in my view, if Josh Sargent is onside there, the goal probably should stand. And then there was an issue of a push around the first goal that David Wagner highlighted, wasn't it, Paddy? What do you make of that one? Does he have a point there in that goal and the build up to it? I think it was on Jack Stevens Jack Stevens on the Norwich man at the back post.
Well, I don't know why, but I was actually focusing in on that duel at the back post as that ball got developed. And he was very, very cute slash an illegal action, but he did. He, before the ball has reached them in flight, they always, you see that often with kind of defenders and attackers when they have duels, that the ones who've been around the block a little bit will just give their opponent a little nudge to get the jump on them. And that's basically what he did. So, you know, I don't know about both hands on. I'd have to see that element again. But the officials clearly didn't see that. If they'd have seen that, then they don't allow that game goal to play out as it did. So David Wagner had a point for me on that. Yeah, he definitely, absolutely, because I was watching it with my own eyes, gave him a push.
Yeah, agreed. So hopefully we've cleared all of those up and haven't spent too long speaking about decisions. I think going back to the phase thing, just having a quick look, it all comes down to whether or not you consider Ashley Barnes to have gained an advantage from being in an offside position in the initial phase. But given there's a couple of Southampton players ahead of him, by the time he puts the ball in the back of the net, I'm not sure you could reasonably make that argument. But again, probably open to interpretation. So there we go. That's all of the refereeing decisions covered. I think it was a penalty, soft, but if we're saying it's a soft penalty, it's a penalty, right? I think that's, we're probably agreed. So yeah, there we go. Yeah, I can see why people are upset about it. But I also think if that wasn't given, Russell Martin would have a very strong case that he should have been. So it's one of those, isn't it? But there we go. We haven't spent too long on that, so that's good. I mean, we've spoken about Norwich City. I thought the second half performance, Sam, was interesting, because actually prior to Christian Fashnak's goal, and obviously the context of Smallbone being off and that giving a little break in play, felt like Southampton were probably more likely to score. Norwich had dropped very deep. They weren't, I wouldn't say they were physically tired, but the way that Southampton play the game, they go to mentally tire opponents, right? It's about having so much of the ball, keeping it in high percentages. And you know, we've all played the game. When you're defending without the ball, it's physically and mentally much more demanding than when you do have it. So that's the idea. You wear your opponents down for that slight moment of lack of concentration and whatnot. Overall, how would you assess it in the end? It felt to me, I came away, even though, you know, I know a lot of people will point to the last minute goal, probably feeling that a point on reflection of the game was probably about right for how it had transpired.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I think it was, a lot of the goals were avoidable. In fact, maybe all of the goals for Southampton were avoidable. So in that sense, it's quite a disappointing one for Norwich. I do agree with you that in terms of the balance of play and chance created and who was in control of what at what times in the match, probably Southampton deserved a point. But you look at how both teams scored the goals, and Norwich have worked really hard to create probably two very good goals and then two goals that Southampton will have wanted to do better with defensively. And I'm not sure Southampton have really had to work especially hard for any of their goals in the end. It's like you say, the way that they play depends on teams perhaps losing that concentration that's so key when you're sort of in a block and trying to defend against the sort of movement that they employ on the ball. But you would have liked to think that if a team that's being backed for promotion from this league scores four goals against you, that they've created at least one lovely passing move and got into the box. But you look at the goals, it's two very avoidable penalties, one set piece, which was, I know there may well have been a foul in there, but pretty poorly defended set piece, and then another one where Che Adams has sort of led two or three defenders in a merry dance and they just couldn't get the ball clear before it fell to him again. And I think that will be disappointing for Norwich looking back on that. There's certainly a good amount for Wagner to analyse with his defenders, and it's quite worrying for me that one of the consistent themes we saw throughout pre-season and probably in that whole game as well in that defensive solidity and structurally being so good, that seemed to all fall apart against Southampton. And defensively, it was quite a worrying one for me. But as you say, I think on the balance of play, and this is what pretty much everyone I've seen and spoken to about this game has said, it does feel like a very fair result. And that probably speaks pretty highly to Norwich's prospects for the season, because it's not like they're coming away from Southampton delighted with a point that they've had to scrap for and that they've gone down the traditional route with away from home. They've probably felt like there were plenty of opportunities for them to win that game. And that does bode well, because it looks like they may well be matching up to the top teams in this league. And you look at their record against some of the teams that were vying for promotion last season, and I think that hinted at the fact that they weren't quite at that level, even when they were sort of in and around the playoffs. They really struggled against the teams that were sort of top 10. And for them to be laying down a marker against a team that on paper is so, so good for this league, I think that does bode really well for them. But yeah, overall, I don't think Norwich fans can have too many complaints about who deserved what. I think a draw was very much the fair result.
Yeah, and I think actually you look at the numbers in and around the game, and I think it points to that as well. I know expected goals isn't everyone's favourite stat, but it is as it currently is. I'm looking at it on FB Ref, which is a very good website for kind of statistical stuff. Ranks Southampton at 3.6 compared to Norwich's 2, but then you have to take in mind that Southampton got 2 penalties, which are a pretty set XG rate. So you take that off, it's about even really in terms of the chance creation numbers, which obviously, you know, we can have a really big debate about whether a penalty is right for the crime. But that's probably a debate for a different podcast. But it shows, and I guess, Paddy, that the flips to play devil's advocate, because I agree with a lot of what Sam said there, but you could argue, again, maybe if you want to take a bit more of a long-term view, and you could argue it was a good time for Norwich to play Southampton in terms of all of the speculation, everything that they're dealing with at the moment. James Ward-Prowse, Romeo Lavia, I think there's lots of other players in the background who would like to go if that opportunity arose. Russell Martin said that in his post-match interview. They're still at the very start of their project with Russell Martin, who wants to play in a very specific way and has made all of the teams that he's coached better. He's left them in a better place than he's found them. They're at the start of that journey. I think there'll be very few teams who go to Southampton and pick up 3 points this year. I think David Wagner's right in his assessment. So that is right, but there's also additional context as well. But Sam's right. Kenny McLean referenced it as well. The fact that Norwich are walking away from St Mary's feeling disappointed, that's a testament to how much they've grown. And I think maybe the biggest compliment of the afternoon came from Russ himself, when in his post-match interview he said, "This is a much better Norwich City team than the one I played towards the end of last season." I mean, that's an external view, and it's also a view of the growth that they've made in the last few months, which, you know, we recognised was an absolute necessity if this season is going to be anything, and could completely derail from here, could improve from here. But it all goes back to the feeling of it, and the feeling is much more positive now, and this result will only add to that, but more so the performance around it.
And that point about, I know it was a different Russell Martin team, different football club, but Swansea was so dominant, but the proximity of that game to this one, I mean, that was very, very towards the end of last season. And that is a pertinent parallel for me, because and Russell also said yesterday that, you know, off the back of that assessment, that the business that Norwich have done, the experience they've added, the game management element. And of course, you know, you could argue, well, it wasn't too clever in 95 minutes on the clock yesterday, but I think that would be very harsh, because in the 2 games, both Hull and the Southampton game, they have faced adversity. They have fallen behind, and they've not buckled. They've actually, you know, come through those storms and come out the other side. And that isn't what we saw from the Norwich team who took on a Russell Martin team at Carrow Road in April. It was a capitulation. I know there was a red card for McCallum, but even prior to that, it was pretty clear there was only one outcome that day. And that's a true testament to David and his coaching staff. And of course, they've added Narcis Pelac to that coaching team as well. They've changed the keeper coach as well. It isn't all on David, and it isn't all about the players they've brought in. They have refreshed the whole footballing side at senior level in the football club. And again, with the caveat that we're 2 games in and the championship is a very testing environment, and things could look very different again in a month, 2 months' time. Right now, it looks like things have majorly improved in a positive fashion, whatever particular aspect of that you want to dig into. And I'm with Southampton. It is early, and Russell talked about, you know, the disruption that he's having to deal with and manage while trying to get games of football under their belts, embedding in a cultural style. He made a very good point that he feels it's what he's facing now is very much Vincent Kompany faced when he went into Burnley this time last year. A team have come down with all the baggage you have to take on board, but really almost a complete U-turn in terms of the style of play and the demands on that set of players. And if that's where Russell's at, then it is going to take a little bit of time, inevitably. But I still look at their front line yesterday and Adam Armstrong. Che Adams, whether he stays or goes, but Che Adams, Premier League grade. Teller, excellent for Burnley, funnily enough, last season at this level. And Alcaraz, I was very impressed with him. I thought he was a standout, and he could be a standout at this season in this league. So in terms of, well, they are in flux, and there is an evolutionary feel around Southampton. I think at the top end of the pitch, you know, Norwich faced players who probably will be part of the journey for Southampton and will be as good as anything they face in this division this season. So I think there is a bit of mitigation in terms of if we're going to be harsh and look at the defensive errors that were in that Norwich performance, they were facing probably as good an attacking force as they will face in this division. And they were 2 minutes or so away from winning. So, yeah, I think Russell's right, you know. But it's good to get that outside perspective. You know, we're inside and following it, and maybe there's not that the degree of detachment. But there's a guy whose only two references to Norwich City are a Swansea team he brought to Carr Road in April and dismissed Norwich fairly easily, and a completely different game yesterday, where they needed essentially his team for all their possession, for all their chances. I mean, it's worth pointing out, you know, he talked, I think, was it 30 plus they created? If you look at shots on target, or attempts on target, the metric is 10-6, much closer than you know, any sense that Norwich were feeding on scraps in the final third. And if that's the case, for me, you know, Russell Martin's a pretty good judge, I think. And he also added, I think it was in his club media interview, that he feels Norwich will be up there. You know, whatever we want to talk about Southampton as a promotion benchmark, he feels this group of Norwich players under this head coach, they will last the course and they will be in and around this promotion conversation. And that, if you're a Norwich fan, is great to hear, isn't it? Because they will feel, whether you've been there in person at Carr Road or on the road at St Mary's, they will feel something's shifting. But to have that confirmation almost from outside the camp, I think it just adds to the belief that they might be onto something.
Absolutely. And I think he also described them as one of the best transitional teams in the league. Pace, powerful, all of these kind of buzzwords that we wouldn't necessarily have associated with them last season. John Rose made a really big impact. And it's interesting because Norwich's midfield at the moment is quite left-footed. So he almost has to come and drift centrally to join them. But I thought they were really brave, Sam, in what they did at points, because they defended. It's going to sound bizarre because they conceded 4 goals. But in terms of actually protecting their box, they didn't do too much wrong. We're kind of looking more at individual errors rather than structurally, and poor decision makings with Yiannoulis and Duffy giving away a penalty. The Che Adams one is an excellent finish, and you know, we can dissect it beyond that of course, and you're right to point out there were some poor defensive moments in there. But in terms of their box, that they were okay, but they were really brave, I thought, by leaving the two men forward that they did, Barnes and Sargent, in the first half in particular. Those two gave Southampton real problems. They gave Norwich a real outlet. But for me, to go alongside that, the bravery of doing that tactically was really interesting. It's certainly something that Russell Martin spoke about, but it gave Norwich really big opportunities in transition. But then you're still willing players to go and join those attacking moments and to have the legs and the willingness and desire to go and attack spaces and to go and create overloads and to go and cause problems. Gabriel Sarro is maybe the best example of that. But this is where Wagner, Pelash, Bula, Hughes, all of them deserve credit for the game plan that they concocted, because to leave two men up, I felt, particularly in that first half, really caused Southampton problems. And credit to Josh Sargent, who I thought was excellent yesterday, and Ashley Barnes, who was perhaps a little bit more quietly effective. The two of them did an excellent job up there in that role.
Yeah, I think so. Norwich looked very dangerous on the counter from minute one. I think I turned to Paddy even before they scored that first goal and said there's going to be plenty of opportunities for Norwich here. And that wasn't just because Southampton were obviously playing so far up the pitch and were so focused on possession. It was also because Sargent and Barnes were engineering a situation where Norwich really had bodies forward at every available opportunity. And you're right to highlight that. And Martin clearly was affected by it because it really gave Southampton a decision to make. And most teams that they'll come up against this season, I'm sure it will be the same old formula that Norwich struggled to break down last season. And it will be, you know, a bank of five, a bank of four, one left up top, and Southampton's job to break that down. And it'll be probably what makes that job easier for Russell Martin, that obviously Pad spoke about, and the amount of time that it takes, is the fact that they will come up against very similar tests week in, week out. And that was similar to what they came up against Sheffield Wednesday. But Norwich gave them a different decision to make. When you leave two up, it means that the system that they had planned for probably wasn't going to be like that. And it gave the defenders a different decision to make. It then gives Martin a different decision to make in terms of whether he keeps the same structure or whether he takes that risk. But the most exciting sign of it for me was the fact that it shows that bravery that I think Norwich have lacked for some time now. I think under Dean Smith, there was so much pragmatism and priority on avoiding issues that we didn't really see Norwich as a brave team, as a team that wanted to take risks and wanted to take the game to the opposition. But Wagner, to give credit to him, since he came in, has spoken about how he wants a brave team that plays quickly, that plays attacking football. And that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have possession. It means that whenever they have the ball, you can see that intent. And I do think they have the players now that work so perfectly in that system. Gabriel Sarr with the athleticism, I think you can tell why it took so many years for Norwich to add that player and to add those players that brought them the athleticism. And you can see within this system why they were so keen to get it for so long, because they have a midfielder now that has the technical quality to finish things off in and around the area, but also has the ability to get up and down and to work under the significant demands that Wagner places on those central midfielders. And I don't know how it would pan out in the Premier League, but I think what Wagner's doing with this system is really getting every ounce out of every player that he has there. I'm sure McLean and Sarah are absolutely exhausted at the end of every game, but they do the job and they do enough to make sure that Norwich are pretty good at both ends of the pitch. And yes, they did concede four goals yesterday, but as you said, there was a lot of individual error involved in that. And tactically, I think Wagner and Pelak, to give him credit, because Wagner did in the press conference before the game, and he has a significant hand in preparing game plans for opposition, I think they got it absolutely tactically spot on. And that is a replicable formula as well, with a number of teams now in the Championship wanting to dominate possession, wanting to take the game to the opposition. That suits Norwich just fine. And the good thing as well is that we've seen they can do the opposite. So if they've got now evidence of a team that can break down staunch defences in what Hull provided and can also counter-attack physically and quickly like they did against Southampton, it looks like tactically they have solutions to most of the problems they're going to face in the Championship this season. And I think that's really encouraging for Norwich.
It is. I also thought the way that they pressed was really intelligent. I think anyone who watched Southampton against Sheffield Wednesday saw how well Southampton used the wide areas, particularly in that first half, the rotations. They got Teller involved. They got Edouzi involved. They were really prominent throughout that game. They also, Sheffield Wednesday, probably lacked the athleticism to go and press Southampton for a prolonged period of time, which Norwich did in different ways. They did go and engage them higher up the pitch at certain points and did that pretty well on the whole. But then also when they did have to retreat into those middle and low blocks, probably as the game progressed, really, they did that okay as well. Maybe not necessarily all of the time, but certainly for some of the time, they showed some positive signs on that. And I thought the way that they almost tried to press them, particularly in the first half, to kind of funnel them centrally, which is why Alcaraz got on the ball quite a lot more, was quite intelligent as well. We didn't see too much of Nathan Teller, which I think probably was by design in terms of how David Wagner sought to go about it, which is good. So, and you know, for as much as we talk about the goals conceded, I do think there is an element of this was just a crazy game. It happens. It was one of those, wasn't it? It was so frantic, so breathless. You know, and as much as we'll be talking about the goals that Norwich conceded, Paddy, we should talk about some of the ones that they scored, because Gabriel Sarras was excellent. Josh Sargent's header was excellent. We've already discussed the cleverness at the set piece for John Rowe to be able to score the header he did. Fashnacks, I know it was a bit messy in terms of how the ball fell to him, but actually before that, it came from a really good burst forward from Dimi Yiannoulis, who really looks to have grown in the first 2 weeks of the season in terms of his ball progression, the way he's carrying the ball up the pitch. I mean, we can reflect negatively on the goals that they conceded, but I also think on the other hand, you have to talk about the quality of some of the goals that they scored as well.
Absolutely. But also, and it follows on from Sam's point, you know, this idea that, well, you know, Norwich are going to basically invite teams onto them and then just go long, launch it and play off Barnes and Sargent. It's quite clear that there's far more refinement and that's unfolding game by game. And for me, the aspect of that that is categorically the case is two or three movements yesterday and superb. I mean, there's a goal, one of the Ipswich goals from Saturday is doing the rounds where it started with their keeper, you know, pop passes through the thirds and, you know, good goal, though it is, in their 2-0 win over Stoke. But Norwich had two or three of those passages of play from Gunn through Stacey, then, you know, into play with Sarah and McLean. And there was, you know, there was one where Fasnacht needed to pass that ball quicker to Barnes, who was unmarked. There was another two or three other occasions. And slicing through a good team like Southampton. And that, for me, is really exciting to see, because it basically underlines that technically there is quite a lot of nuance in terms of what Wagner's trying to do. It isn't simply, and we touched on him, and I agree, he has looked markedly better for me at the start of the season. Yiannoulis with his ability to stretch the play. We saw Stacey again yesterday for the first goal, how advanced he was. They have that. They have John Rowe now in the mix. You've got the ability to break forward from Zara, but also in and amongst all that athleticism and dynamism and pace, you have some very good technical movements as well through the midfield. And, you know, if we start to see more of that again, this point Sam was making about, you know, Norwich have faced two very different types of challenge. You know, Hull were playing a lot deeper and Norwich were able to still find spaces and create plenty of chances. Southampton was more of a type of game we'd associate with this type of David Wagner template, which is transitions, as Russ said, you know, very strong in that phase. But the fact that they've got, as I say, clearly some growth in terms of what they're trying to do and how they progress the ball, I think that will stand them in great stead when it is a whole style challenge they face probably more often than not at Carrow Road, or they go away to one of the better teams in the division and they'll have far less in terms of possession and territory, but they can still punch, you know, like for like in terms of chances and goals scored. And capped by, of course, when you have players of the talent of Gabby Zara, who peerless in the Championship. I don't think there's a better.
He's rubbish. Let's not mention him.
August the 13th. So that needs to click on to September the 1st in double quick time, because I wrote about it yesterday. My point is, you know, there was a lot at the end of last season, and maybe Stuart Webber added to that about, you know, there is interest clearly in a player as good as him, but it has gone very thankfully quiet around him and his name over the summer. He came out himself, did some media in Brazil, in his native Brazil, and made it clear for him his unfinished business, and it's getting to the Premier League with Norwich. But if he continues to do what he's doing, you do fear the top end clubs at this league, i.e. the ones who've come down who have plenty of money to play with, or mid to slightly lower end of the Premier League, because I don't think he's quite in, you know, I don't think you could drop him into a top 10 Premier League side yet. There's still areas of his game he needs to add. But boy, is he adapting to English football now. And you see as well with him, again, I wrote about this, the amount of sloppy turnovers that, you know, through poor passing and trying to force. There was one yesterday, but it stood out because it was the only one where he played a square ball when they were in a promising position. I think it was second half. And straight away, you could see his reaction when the play broke down. Thankfully, it didn't come to anything, but he was annoyed with himself. And I think he clearly knows he's got to cut that out of his game, because the other side, what he brings, I mean, it is a concern to me that there's still 2 or 3 weeks left in this window, because although we haven't had any chatter around him, if you're a progressive Premier League club or a club who's looking to get back there in this league, you're looking at him because he's a player who makes things happen. You see Hamer from Coventry, he's gone to Sheffield United for reportedly 15 million. And you know, what could this guy be worth in terms of what he could offer a potential side in terms of that midfield artistry, the goals and the assist as well? We're not just talking about a player who looks good on the eye. He actually is, his numbers are there for all to see. You know, this season so far, the amount of chances he's created, the goal, the assists, his ability on set pieces, his quality on set pieces. He is without doubt as good as anything in the Championship in his position. And it is a concern that, you know, they can navigate between now to the end of the window and not have to deal with something that would be, financially, it might be difficult to turn down. But from a footballing standpoint, everything we're talking about now in this conversation, particularly about the evolution under Wagner, he is pivotal. He is intrinsic to it. He is indispensable, if you want to use that phrase, for me. I mean, to lose him at this stage, that would, whatever they banked in terms of tens of millions, I'm not sure that would compensate, because he is emerging now quite clearly as a pivotal part of what Wagner's trying to do with this Norwich team.
And he's not even fully fit. And that's the thing at the moment. He is he's a Premier League footballer, that's for sure. And he will be a Premier League footballer with or without Norwich in the not so distant future, I would imagine. But as long as he can hold off until after the summer window, that would be fine. I mean, you mentioned some of those numbers. These are his numbers from yesterday. 4 chances created, 2 big chances created, 100% dribbles, if you want to believe that. 3 passes into the final third, obviously a goal and assist as well. It's productivity, but it's numbers behind that as well. He's an excellent footballer. And I think, as I said, when they came up to full speed, he's going to be a pretty frightening prospect for the rest of the Championship. But if anyone of a Premier League club is recruitment team watching this, he's rubbish. I'll go and look elsewhere. There's plenty of other options. One player that they have sold, Sam, for money this week, Max Aarons. It was quite a saga. He was going to Leeds, and then he might go to Southampton. Then he definitely was going to Bournemouth. Really interesting to see how that played out. I know from an Norwich's perspective, it's maybe been hailed as some kind of masterpiece, but I think it was, from their perspective, they had 3 offers which were pretty much identical and they accepted all 3, and then it was up to the player. So quite how much of a masterclass it is, I'm not quite sure. But he has gone to Bournemouth. It is probably the situation that we were all anticipating. Everyone heard Stuart Webber's comments at the start of the summer about him needing to move on. They heard Max's comments as well earlier in the summer about how he felt that his career needed to move on as well. £12 million package, however you want to split it. I've seen it split numerous different ways, which is always really interesting and completely pointless. It's a £12 million package that we can all agree on. What do you make of it? Have Norwich got a good bit of business here for a player in the final 12 months of his deal?
Yeah, I think they've done an excellent piece of business for themselves based on that, to be honest. And in isolation, a £12 million package, which we're told, you know, it's realistic that Norwich get a significant number of those add-ons that they've included in that deal. So hopefully they will be getting up towards that figure. You look at how the saga with Todd Cantwell played out last year, and I know that he wasn't in the same sort of form or held in the same regard by the time he got to that point as Aarons is now. But you look at how that situation can play out, and it could have looked very poor for Norwich, even in sort of 5-6 months time. We know there was significant interest from abroad at various times, and he could have agreed a pre-contract in January to leave the club for free. So to get a deal worth up to £12 million, I think is good work by Stuart Webber. Again, as it was with Cantwell, it's a little bit of a shame seeing the sort of figures that were bandied about earlier on in his career, and the fact that probably that would have been the move that he needed at the time as well. And I think had the interest maybe been slightly more significant at different times, then it would have been a better outcome for all if he could have gone slightly higher up the pyramid for slightly more money. And I think everyone associated with Norwich would have been happier with that. But the thing that really put it into context for me that makes it look especially good, and I know Will Jennings wrote a column, I think the other day, about what a masterclass Webber's played in the right back position. And when you put it into the context of the fact that Norwich have got Stacey, let go of Aarons, and got a £12 million package involved, that does look like fantastic business. And I don't want to start comparing Stacey to Aarons just yet, given the former has played two games for Norwich and Aarons played 213 and was pretty consistent throughout them. But it does look overall like, especially in Wagner's system, they've done a pretty good deal and they've come out of it looking pretty good. You've got to remember they've got Kellen Fisher as well. They managed to sell Ballymumba for what they think was a decent fee. So in the right back position, a lot of work has gone on, but I think they actually look pretty well set in the short term and in the future, with Fisher obviously only 19. So I think that business is good for Norwich, but obviously, as there always is when a player who's contributed so much to the club leaves, there has been a bit of an outpouring of emotion, and you can see why Norwich fans were so affected by him leaving the club, because he's been a mainstay not only in the difficult last two years, but also in the very joyous moments that came in the two championship title wins before that. And he was a really key player in that Norwich team, especially at sort of his peak in a yellow and green shirt. So I'm sure everyone is hoping that he goes and makes a significant success of it. At Bournemouth, it was interesting to watch that sort of saga play out and hear the different parties' reaction to it since then. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how he does in the Premier League team with a new energy. And it did feel like it was getting a little bit stale, even for a couple of years, to be honest, for him in a Norwich shirt. So I think it's the move that he wanted. It's for a fee that Norwich will be happy with. And overall, in context, I think it suits all parties.
Yeah, it's two things that I pick up on. First and foremost being, you know, it was a similar debate with Cantwell around the maybe the valuation points being higher, which is fine. But and I get, you know, maybe looking back on that with a little bit of regret. But also it's like, well, if no one puts money down, it's not like they had five £30 million offers on the table, because if that was the case, clearly he wouldn't be a Norwich City player and wouldn't have been a Norwich City player for so long. So they have never had an offer that was clearly of their valuation at any given point. And obviously that fluctuates between contractual situation, performance, league, all of that kind of stuff. So I think you can maybe get caught up and say, oh, well, you know, he was a £30 million player 5 years ago. Well, maybe he wasn't, because no one was willing to pay £30 million for him. So they've got to a place where someone has given them a fee reflective of his contractual situation, reflective of the fact that he's in the Championship. I think they've done pretty well for themselves off the back of that. And, you know, I've said this numerous times, I think the fact he's a right back does make it more difficult to justify a club spending £30 million on him, for example, because, you know, let's say I'm a sporting director and I go to my board of directors and say, oh, you know what, I've found him. I've got the new £30 million man. And immediately you're thinking, brilliant striker, central midfielder, winger, someone who's going to score goals, someone who's a brilliant centre half. No, he's a right back. It's a very difficult sell. You know, it's a very difficult one. And the second point I would make in terms of the debate, which again, I've seen as well, which is, oh, well, you know, they haven't maybe upgraded. And I think it's like this idea that maybe we don't need to look at it as a quality thing. It's just a difference thing. Jack Stacey is very different to Max Aarons. I would say he's very different in the final third. Can Max Aarons deliver the consistently quality crosses that we've seen from Jack Stacey in the opening weeks of his Norwich City career? I'm not sure he can. Max Aarons is very good and better in other aspects. Jack Stacey is good and better in other aspects. He's more athletic. He's bigger, more physical than Max is. So I think, you know, it's a bit of a futile debate, but those are the two points that I would pick up on. Yeah, I mean, Paddy, I don't really want to go over Max Aarons again, because we discussed him at length on Window Watch, which people can go and consume. But I guess it sparks what's going to be an interesting few weeks. We mentioned Sarah. Aarons has obviously gone. Feels like probably Omar Bamadeli and Rashica will follow in the weeks ahead. And I guess we'll see Norwich adopt a very similar strategy, won't we? These are two players that, particularly in Rashica's case, they could have sold earlier in the summer for a lower fee. This is about Norwich, as we've seen, as a consistent throughout Stuart Webber's tenure, to be fair, ensuring that any departure is on their terms. And those, they're not, as maybe they felt they were being with Max Aarons earlier in the summer, and certainly Milo Rashica, lowballed because of where they are. It's going to be about maximizing the fees that they can get for these two players that we probably all still expect to leave.
Correct. And David Wagner, on that point, both at the end of the season, there was the fans forum hosted by Radio Norfolk, Zoe Webber attended at the start of the summer, reiterated Norwich will sell players, but it'll be on Norwich's terms. There won't be a financial imperative or a necessity, which hasn't always been the case under Stuart Webber. We know infamously or famously the Maddison sale that summer to Leicester, that did keep the proverbial wolf from the door. They're not in that scenario. And the fact that they held firm with Aarons, but are holding firm with Rashica, Omobamadi less so, but you can imagine it would be the same process if something tangible comes into play with that player. That underlines, yeah, they will only go if it makes footballing sense, firstly, and then the finances are right. And by that means Norwich have a valuation on these players. I think Stuart Webber's comments in the official confirmation of Max's departure were Bournemouth matched our valuation and on we go. So, you know, there was no deal cut or a charitable kind of benevolence to affording Max an opportunity to go and chase his Premier League dream. If Bournemouth hadn't come, or Southampton for that matter, or Leeds for that matter, with an offer that matched Norwich's valuation for that player at this current stage of his contractual cycle, he wasn't going anywhere. And it'll be the same with Rashica. And you can see the interplay played out a lot of the time through the Turkish media. But we've had almost a saga, I think it's not to overstate it, for this summer around that player. The player doesn't want to be in the Championship at Norwich City. That's obvious. He does want to go back to Galatasaray. That's obvious. Galatasaray want the player because why wouldn't they? He had an impact in helping them to win the Super League title. And I think they're a step or two away from the Champions League group stage this season. They're a club who are looking onwards and upwards, and they view him as part of that. All the messaging that comes out attributed to the figures, senior figures in Galatasaray's football club tell you that. He's a player they want to be part of the next stage of their journey. So we know all that. But really, the fact he's still here would mean that Galatasaray have yet to hit the numbers that Norwich require for that player. And it's going to be really interesting how late this goes. Do we feel it will conclude in Milo Rashica is paraded as a Galatasaray player following a transfer from Norwich? Yes. But when and for how much, that's still all in play. And obviously, on with Bamadeli, less advanced, far less advanced, but you're starting now to see a pickup in the speculation and the clubs he's getting linked with. AC Milan again over the weekend, reportedly a player of interest, but the last report from a very reputable source in Italy, Gazzetta, was that possibly from a financial point of view, they wouldn't want to do anything until the January window. Well, I'm not sure they'll be afforded that luxury, because I can see Premier League clubs now who may, in the weeks and days and weeks ahead, be in need of a centre-back, because they may be losing centre-backs at their current clubs. So that, I think, will accelerate the Omobamadeli aspect to Norwich's remaining few weeks of their transfer window. I think Rashica, that will move to a conclusion, which we all expect to be Galatasaray. And then thereafter, if there isn't any unwanted saga around Gabi Zara that comes into play, then I think it'll be round the margins. Tim Krul, you know, we talked about him on Window Watch. Could we foresee a scenario where he departs? Yes. And there might be one or two others. You know, if it becomes clear in the next 2 or 3 weeks worth of games that certain players aren't going to get a look in, will they want to stay and hang around? Maybe not. Obviously, that you've got situations with younger players, it might be clear in the minds of Stuart and David that by the end of this month, it's time for some of those younger players to probably go out and play some football on loan. And of course, they've still got the loan route as an inward option. Don't rule that one out. So it's enough to keep Norwich fans interested, but I think they need to dial down any expectations of we're getting a central defensive midfielder, we're getting another expensively acquired forward player or another centre-back. Certainly on the centre-back, there'll only be one arrive if Omobamadeli goes. So we're in a bit of a holding pattern again, I feel. But yeah, in the facet that we've discussed here in this segment, Norwich letting Rashica, letting Omobama Daly go, that will only happen if clubs meet their valuation, clearly.
Yes, and I've seen a lot about kind of squad depth and, well, what happens if X player gets injured next year? Well, that's the Championship, I'm afraid, that Norwich can't carry players and buy players in the anticipation that one might suffer a major injury, because what if they don't? Then you have to manage that situation. So, at the moment, the numbers in and around the squad make sense. They have, as it stands, three senior fit centre-backs with Jaden Warner in the background, with Jonathan Tomkinson returning very soon. You've got five players in that area. Then Grant Hanley returns. Suddenly you get six. How many do you... Are you saying you need three more in case the Gibson gets injured and Duffy gets injured? I mean, you could go on and the list could go on forever. At some point, sometimes you just need a bit of luck, and they just need a bit of luck. And who knows, maybe they'll be afforded that. They're pretty strong in other areas. We haven't seen Chemisław Puheta yet. Sam McCallum, there's been some links with as well. So yeah, I could see some tidying up around the edge of the squad in the coming weeks. But it's... pretty ludicrous that the transfer window is allowed to go on as long as it does into the season, and allow the type of uncertainty that Norwich, less so, more so kind of Southampton, Leeds. I mean, you only have to look at what Daniel Farker is having to contend with at the moment. It's pretty ludicrous, and having lots of players either out on loan or refusing to play for the club. That's a nonsense for me when the football is ongoing, but that's a different debate entirely. Sam, a couple more points then to round off the podcast. I did want to speak to you a little bit about the new head coach of Norwich City Women, which is Martin Herdman. Brilliant bit of trivia that his brother is the manager of Canada. John, and done a very good job there. I've got them into the World Cup and all type of stuff, which is brilliant. You went to speak to him in midweek, Thursday, which isn't midweek. It's the latter end of the week. No, it was Wednesday, wasn't it?
Wednesday.
I'll tell you what, the Aaron saga has thrown my calendar right out of the window. I don't know what day was what now. It was the middle of the week. I thought it was. You went to speak to him. Looks a very good appointment on paper. He's UEFA licensed, real experience, both in the men's game, Newcastle Academy. He's worked in the women's side of the game as well. This seems like a really good appointment. What were your first impressions of him, having spoken to him?
He spoke really, really well and came across very well. Seems like somebody who is enthusiastic about the challenge and excited about what he's faced with at Norwich City Women. Also somebody who has moved a significant distance to be here, which I think shows the magnitude of the job in his eyes and the pull that they've managed to get from there. Because, you know, at that level, I think it's proved difficult for them to attract players that aren't from maybe slightly more local places. So to be able to get somebody, a manager who is so excited about this role that they'll move that far, they'll change their life. And he spoke really glowingly about the city. He's obviously from Newcastle and spoke a lot about the comparisons between Newcastle United fans and Norwich fans. He said when he's out in the city, he sees a lot of Norwich shirts, and that's a really encouraging thing for him. And the passion that he has for football is really exciting to see. And I think he wants to play football in the right way with the right ideas as well. Whether he's got the players to do that, I think time will tell. But the idea is that Norwich will continue to progress above the level that they are. They're obviously hoping for a promotion this season from the fourth tier, and it looks like they're targeting quick progression. They announced six signings on the day of Herdman's announcement. We're expecting another one soon. So it looks like a very exciting time to be in and around Norwich City Women. And he was a really interesting person to interview. You can read that obviously on our written channels, and the full interview is available on the Pinkin YouTube channel as well. So yeah, plenty to catch up with women wise, and I'm looking forward to seeing how they do this year.
Yeah, and they start their season next weekend away to Sudbury. They'll need an away kit for that, which they're going to be using a third kit. So I would expect that in due course as well. So there we go. Norwich are definitely having one, for those who do keep asking. Finally, then, Paddy, to round off the pod, I wanted to get your gauge of excitement. What are you more excited for? Wednesday's Carabao Cup first round tie away at QPR, or the prospect later this month of a Carabao Cup second round away draw to Bristol City?
Neither, Connor, if I'm brutally honest. Yesterday, Saturday afternoon, we actually, there won't be a pre QPR cup presser, so we won't be trooping down to Colney on Tuesday or Monday. So we bounced a few at David Wagner in terms of his approach to that game and whether it be wholesale changes. And unsurprisingly, straight after Saturday's game, he wasn't really in a position to sort of give too much insight. But you would be surprised if they don't ring the change. I don't see there's any value in a Sargent or a Barnes or a... We've talked about the centre-backs, Gibson and Duffy. You play one of them two and they get injured. And I don't know where that leaves you in terms of the far more pressing matter for the week ahead, which is Millwall this day next week at Carrow Road. So, yeah, I won't be crying any tears if it gets to the final whistle at Loftus Road and Norwich have bowed out of the Carabao Cup, put it that way.
No, absolutely not. And of course, yeah, Norwich's next championship game will be at home at Carrow Road to Millwall next weekend. We will be there. We'll also be at Loftus Road in midweek, which we're all absolutely buzzing about. For full coverage there. And what I am going to say next week, we've got a very exciting addition to the podcast. All I'm going to say is cardboard cutout, and I'll leave that to the imagination. Of course, if you would, if you've got this far into the podcast, if you are in a position that you would like to come on board as a sponsor and join us, then that would be most appreciated. We're always welcome to that. Sam's got a cap on. We're very happy to wear any branded caps or any type of clothing within reason. Or, you know, particularly if you're a food company, that would tie in nicely. We've gone throughout a whole podcast about discussing food, which is a rarity, but there we go. That probably leads us nicely to end the show. Thank you very much to Paddy and Sam for joining me. Thank you all very much for listening. We will see you next weekend. And given the 8-goal thriller we had at St Mary's, the fact it's next Sunday is probably not a bad thing at all. Thanks for watching and listening.